call. Rusty here, live from the Mercure Hotel in Liverpool, sat on a bed with Shane Fletcher. How you doing, mate? You all right?
I'm going good, thanks, mate.
Cool. And you've got a pretty important day ahead of you today.
Big day. I've had a couple. I managed to get to the cricket last week. So World Cup cricket final, and England just got over us, obviously. We won't want to talk about that anymore. But yeah, we've got a massive rivalry against Australia, so to have our Silver Ferns playing their Diamonds, it's going to be a big afternoon.
Nice. Who's your money on?
We're going to have to play well and win those key moments that are in every encounter like that, but pressures of finals can make anything happen. So if we hold our nerve, we've got a chance, but obviously they're number one ranked team in the world for a reason.
Yeah, no, they're decent. Mm-hmm. Wow. So, well, look, I definitely want to chat about some of your other experiences since you've been here. Do you want to kind of just, well, I have no idea how we've ended up on this bed together. However, do you want to just explain a little bit of your background and how we've come to be here?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm very fortunate to currently be the manager of the successful rugby side down in the Southern Hemisphere, the Crusaders. My role is a pastoral role, a real well-being element to it around our off-field function. And obviously that has a big part to play in our on-field function. We've got an environment down there that is renowned across the world for the way that we work together and get the best out of each other, and therefore define what other environments would deem a culture. And that cultural dynamic is something that is a significant part of our performance. And we've been fortunate to have had quite a successful history, but just in recent times we've been able to go back to back to back, which in the professional environment of sport is quite a significant achievement. But our mindset is to continue that run and set ourselves up to be champions each and every moment, and that'll give us a chance when we play in finals to actually get a tag. So and connecting and reaching out for the opportunity that I've had to come across to watch a wee bit of netball. I've been able to work alongside you, Rusty, in getting a dynamic of environment that isn't always sports relative, but they've had sports connotations. So over the last 8 to 10 days, I've had the opportunity
to... Come on, let's do your itinerary. Where have you been? I haven't organised your whole trip, by the way.
Friday, I went to the Sandhurst Military Academy.
Yeah.
And connected with their leadership component. And that was a leadership office, as well as some people involved in their leadership involvement, their selection and the productivity, I guess, of really structured leaders.
Yeah.
Then I was fortunate across the weekend to connect with some friends and grabbed a couple of tickets to the cricket. And then on Monday I went down to Cardiff and spent some time with Elliot and the crew down at... Elliot was down there for a meeting with the sports psych team at Sports Wales.
Cool. So that's Elliot Newell recently on the pod, one of my favourite pods. What was your reflections on that day?
My reflections on that day were really considered around the research component that was being defined around environments, I guess, of different functional groups, so business, sports, social, and we were looking at defining components of environments, and the meetings talked about what the best approach to the research might be. So in discussions through the day and meetings through the day, we talked about the many different dynamics that needed to be considered before we could actually come up with the tag environment. And one of those components we talked about collated and collective effort. And before we could actually define what collated and collective was, we actually needed to understand what effort was. So we had discussions like that right through the day.
Oh, it sounds really highbrow.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. And it was a great old lunch down there too, so there was good lunchtime chat.
Nice, cool.
In a social context too.
And then Tuesday Birmingham?
Tuesday, I had a wee drive up from Cardiff. It took me about nearly an hour and a half just to get about 400 metres down one of the Cardiff streets, but drove out to Birmingham and spent Tuesday at Birmingham City Football and they're basically within their academy system. met up with some fantastic people right across the board there, and got the opportunity to talk to people, but also stand pitch side and see the dynamic and of their coaching environment and their performance environment.
What were your top bits of Dodsey and Stu English and Dan and everyone? What were you?
Really passionate people. And when I walked in, you walk into that environment, and if you're going to define the indicators of culture, in that whole the sounds and the sights, but also the feelings, the vibes, people were really connected and connected to their purpose. And you could see that in the fact that a lot of them were walking high on their toes and bouncing to their different environments, working really, really hard. The interaction with their athletes was outstanding along with each other. They used the term team a heck of a lot, and it wasn't a false term. It was something that meant a lot to them, and there was a real purpose in their oratory action, but also their interaction. And it was a great old day.
Nice. I'm going to keep an eye, see if they're bouncing on their toes when I go in. It might just be me.
Yeah.
Cool. And then what? So did Birmingham, then what else?
I snuck on up the next day up towards the FA, up towards St George's Park. And then on Wednesday, met up with Gary Bamford and had a great conversation around both of our experiences, and talked about, with Gary being with his SAS background, his Special Forces background, and his latest connection to them was in recruitment. So we talked about, I guess, recognition of character and how do you define character, and then we talked about performance pressures. And obviously in sport, there was a win and a loss consequence, whereas for them the consequence was far more significant. But really it was the fact that there was a consequence.
Yeah, it's interesting because we chatted earlier about, you know, in your 10 years at the organisation, how many times you think has been, you know, you've thought, oh, we got that appointment wrong, and you just said that it just doesn't happen really. So you must be doing a pretty decent job of your talent ID.
Our talent ID, we've got a development system in New Zealand where it's very school-based rather than academy-based. So we're getting our athletes with their characteristics fairly well defined by the time they're 18 years old as school leavers. We've got a lot of eyes on and ears on and feelers out there, and ensuring that if we invite someone in, that they are in a great position to pick it up and take it up. There might be a dynamic to their character that we believe through osmosis that our culture will enhance, and there has been some really good examples of that where others who haven't quite been performing in other environments have come to us and gone through and become All Blacks in a short term. And again, what that specifically is, I don't think there's any specifics to it apart from, in so many ways, just offering little snippets to them as both athletes and as people. And they generally go okay.
Cool. And you saw Kate as well. So Kate Baker at the FA, head of insights. What type of stuff was Kate talking about, or what were you chatting about?
I love spending the day with Kate. A really passionate person, and so insightful and purposeful, and really understood, I guess, what the intended outcomes were for her efforts, and the input that she was having around the micro identification of athletes, just ensuring that no stone's unturned in what they're trying to do there, and I guess being able to offer a more of a global dynamic of an athlete to their environment, and therefore ensure that they weren't taking punts on people. They were actually really informed decisions, and the work that they're doing, but also the dynamic of the evolvement of what they're doing is really significant. And Kate talked a lot about potential, and we certainly had a vibe of real potential in the way they operated, but also in the people that they've got.
Yeah, so they would be trying to help support the coaches with better understanding, much more holistically, the players prior to, during, and when they're around their environments. What are your thoughts on that? Because obviously you get your players at 18, 19, you'll have been in a couple of football, you know, environments where it's a little bit younger than that. What are your thoughts on that?
I was just amazed at, you know, for us, as I said, our schools are empowered and our club systems are empowered to grow our athlete in the rugby sense, but also basically across all sports in New Zealand. The actual academy structure and the identification of 5- and 6-year-olds and putting them into a formalised academy program surprised me a little bit, because of the fact that it potentially it was a little bit of a suppression as well, and the fact that it restricted a little bit of their multi-sport game sense involvement. So therefore, you know, some of that cross-brain development just from being in specialised programs potentially could have an effect. That was something that with the work that Kate and her team are doing was exciting, because of the fact that she was obviously picking them up a little bit later, and the information that was shared via a number of systems across the football clubs, and the way that the FA hosted some of that information. It was really interesting around how technology was allowing them to do that.
Yeah.
And so being able to get a greater picture of the global athlete that they were looking to prepare and present.
Cool. Talking of global picture, tell me what you mean by pastoral. So yours is a pastoral role. What does that mean to the Crusaders?
It's just making sure everybody's okay, really, in a simple form. On tour, I guess I operate very much like Mum and Dad would. So you were talking about going on wee adventures with your boy and your family, and just making sure that we travel well, that they're well supported, that the guys feel safe, and we're able to operate safely, and therefore, you know, in our environment, the performance context, we can't have influences that will extract energy. So just looking to empower and energise and connect and empathise, and, you know, so many dynamics to it, but just about just making sure everybody's okay.
Including coaches or players or everyone? Yep. I mean, what would be the scale of your role? What do you feel like you're capable of doing?
I had some readings shared with me, really, from a book that Alex Ferguson had written, and he talked about leaders and leadership, and he talked about the dynamics of almost the unseen, unheard component of leadership, and that's something I pride myself on. And that's something that, you know, when you're assisting a coaching group, they generally are to the fore of the sport. And in our instance, it's the same. People could probably name our 4 to 5 coaches, but they wouldn't be able to name any of the backroom staff who offer probably equally as important opportunities for players and athletes and every member of the group to perform in. You know, our physio staff and our Mercury staff, our wellbeing staff, our sports specialists in the sports science fields, our strength and conditioning people all offer quite a dynamic. So they all fall under the pastoral umbrella, because we're an environment that, you know, each and every one of us contributes. And I think I've used the term several times across the week, you know, our activation is inspired by inspiration, and we just know that those around us are working equally as hard for ourselves. So it's something that, you know, Muhammad Ali once said, what drove him in the rumble in the jungle was as simple as me, we. And the me was about making sure that he was okay and well prepared, but if he connected with the we, then the we was his foundation, and that was his supporters and everybody around him.
What's you said Mercury group, did you say? What wellbeing, what's that?
Yeah, Mercury is really a connection of our wellbeing people. So our physio, yeah, really it's our physio, our personal and social development manager, our mental skills support, the wider management, really. It almost takes the coaching group out, and some of the logistics support staff out, and then it's a group that comes together at the beginning of each week just to talk about each and every one and just make sure that we're okay, and those that might need a little bit of support in any one of the pillars that we've talked about, whether it be a mental pillar or a technical, tactical, physical or nutritional.
Cool. And where does Angus sit with that? So Angus Gardner's obviously, he's general manager, he's the boss,
yeah.
Is he?
Yeah, he is.
It's blown my mind.
Actually, Gus, he's outstanding in what he does. Yeah. He's a guy that empowers, and his leadership is often from beside or behind. He's not someone that stands out the front and wiggles a finger or anything, but JD is around making sure that our professional environment is working well. So all of the realms of the professional function for us sit underneath his scope, and he reports to the CEO and then reports to the board on behalf of professional rugby.
Yeah, and he would be quite a silent leader, because once again, until you told me he was general manager, I didn't know, which is pretty remarkable, really, because you've just won Super Rugby for the third time in a row, and yet I've never seen a picture of him breakdancing or any of that stuff.
Yeah,
I'm sure he'd be a good breakdancer.
Oh, I think so, or he's probably more of a line dancer than a breakdancer with old Gus.
Reminds me, both of you remind me a lot of Richard Hill. So Richard Hill would work in the pathway and with England as a team manager, and he'd be very much to the side, behind. He'd be a great follower. He'd be model really good behaviours. He would care for people. He'd be if there was a head of well-being, I think he'd be head of well-being.
Yeah, really important roles, because I think the fact is sometimes from behind you actually see far more of where the whole group is going and how you're actually going, whereas sometimes we get a little bit hooked on that personality, and we hear about that a lot in football, where the dynamic of leader comes in and says, this is my way, follow me, and forgets to turn around with empathy. And doesn't realise that, yes, he's got a collective following, but also he's got people on the peripheral that just aren't either A, inspired, engaged, ignited, whatever reason it is, but you just lose that performance context of your fringe, and sometimes your fringe is the most important component of your performance.
Yeah, and sometimes they look around and there's no one there as well.
Or they're walking the other way.
Where have you guys gone? Yeah. Oh, okay, that's interesting. And what's... So how does how do the coaches fit into this? So I'd be really curious about Razor and how he fits into the environment, but also, you know, Agara's been over the last couple of years and clearly had an impact on you, and you guys have had from listening to the interview I listened to the other week, you guys have, sounds like you've changed him as a human being, if I'm honest. I mean, how do they fit into this dynamic?
They are a really key component, obviously, and with Razor, he's that character. You've mentioned the breakdancing side of things, but he brings a real energy, and he's someone that each and every day he's up, and we talked about being on toes. He's on tiptoes, and that's his greatest strength, is energising the group and being excited and at times being a bit random, and you see that. But on the other side of that, you've got Ronan, who's a little bit more detail. And for us, we do some profiling of character and personality, just so that we're aware of ourselves and aware of others. And with Ronan, he's a little bit more of what we call a red dot, a little bit more logistical. So if it makes sense, let's just do it, because why wouldn't we? So a little bit of his background has been driven by that. Some of that Northern Hemisphere mindset around game structure and game pressure.
Strategy.
Strategy around kick versus probably playing a ball in hand more. But he came in, and as he's grown, he's a hell of a human. And what I've really admired about him is he's actually acknowledged the effect the environment's had on him and how much growth he's given. And then on the other side of it, we were able to acknowledge to him as to how his contributions, again, have...
What's his legacy? So what do you think he's left behind?
I think, again, it's around that more global scope on how we can play. In the fact that the greater your toolbox and the greater the range of tools, whenever something comes up, you've got a tool to fix it. And that's something that I think Roger's been fantastic with, is we've now got a real collective blend. And when you've got people like Richie Mwanga, who have got a natural view of the game and a natural tendency to play, having a more of a global scope on what he can do and the arrays of how to utilise space And, you know, we've seen a lot more kick passing and just trying to break up that line speed element of things and that rushing defence as to how we can get around them, possibly get through them or get over them.
Yeah.
And that's something that Rodgers really bought. And as I say, he's a hell of a human and the old Irish accent and a couple of big nights on the Guinness probably are some of the legacies that he's going to leave with us.
Nice. And what else about, I mean, so how has that evolved? So you've been there 10 years. Would you have been saying the same stuff 10 years ago?
In a way, because of the fact that we've had a characteristic of success for a long time, and it depends on how you define a success. Some people get really hooked on championships and winning the title, meaning you've been successful. But at times we've evolved through some of our cattle probably haven't been as strong as we'd like at times, just through the way that it's worked. And we've had to bide our time and make sure that we're still building our foundation and I guess growing our collective. We've had some outstanding people come through, you know, the Todd Blackadders, who they're never a greater servant leader. Someone that would always roll his sleeve up and get alongside and just, you know, again, a hell of a guy, a hell of a rugby player, a hell of a rugby coach. And yet Todd didn't get the joys of holding up a trophy. Got so close and a couple of key moments didn't quite go the group's way, so therefore he didn't get that opportunity. But all of the efforts that Todd and his group put in gave us a great foundation for these past 3 years and also moving forward. So you know, that's been the consistency of what I've seen and heard and felt across my involvement there. And you know, I've had a whole lot of, I guess the roles I've played, some have been right on the peripheral and looking in, and now being in the middle of it and possibly looking out at times, still see some very consistent things.
Nice. And what happens, so after you win a title, I mean, how do coaches then just, and the whole place, does the whole place just, people go off and they regenerate and they're doing what you're doing and they're going into different worlds and reporting back? I mean, or is Razor just out surfing and breakdancing, or what's going on now with the organisation?
Well, Ray's great at finding a little bit of solace and some isolation, and he's always got a plan or two around water. So I think a few of the coaches were heading to Fiji. I know Brad's on his way over this way to the Scarlets. Rona's already started at La Rochelle. The players themselves have all scattered to either the Māori All Blacks environment or the All Blacks environment, or some are taking maybe a week and a half to 2 weeks before they go to their provinces. So there's still quite a massive rugby involvement for everybody, and you know, I've been fortunate this year to come across and make some connections and you know, do some fantastic learning. But I know that the likes of Jason Ryan, who was the Ford coach, or who is the Ford's coach, he spent time in France last year. There's the World Cup influence for a number of them. So we've got a relationship with Hino Rugby Club over in Japan. So a number of our people are going over and spending some time with them and somehow tying it into a World Cup final or there or thereabouts if they can. So, yeah, you know, rugby for us doesn't stop and we love it. And, you know, as much as there's a little bit of decluttering in one way, it's a re-energising, but realistically our energy levels are pretty high come end of campaign anyway, just on the back of getting the opportunity to hold that trophy up again.
Nice. And you would be renowned as also being probably the sporting organisation I hear about the most from people that have been to visit it. So recently, last year, Mark Irish and Sean Marsden went over. This year, Andre Bukes, Farad Douglas, loads of people just seem to be allowed into your environment and sharing. And what's your philosophy around that? Why is that the case? And yeah, just, yeah, bring some of that stuff to life.
Yeah, at times, you know, again, we can be a wee bit guarded, but realistically, we've got some fantastic connections across the world. And we know that if people empower us, we're only too happy to empower them. And you know, that sharing is empowering, and we hope that if people come in and spend time with us, they get a little bit of an idea of how it works. We're a really hard environment to replicate, but also we find that we go somewhere else. We're probably wasting our energy and our time if we try and grab the collective and then try and impart it in, you know, into our environment when we get home. So I think that's what people are getting the opportunity to do. We have quite a significant number of people through, and we have had probably more so this year, and they're from all parts of the world, and different relationships in different ways for different people across the organisation. But as I
said, why do you think they come to you?
We were voted through our research company that had a whole lot of different formula, and we were voted the Australasian sports team of the last 25 years. So it's just an indicator of we don't go too badly in a whole lot of areas, and it's not something that we'd like to be considered arrogant about. It's something that we really enjoy, and you know, I guess if we were a little bit more defensive and a little bit more siloed, we may be deemed arrogant. But
you might not have won that award.
Yeah, we may not have. We might have had to give it away. It was worth a little bit of money to us. But you know, that I think is the thing. You know, we are renowned for, you know, that culture dynamic, and people are really interested. And when they come, we always challenge them. It's a bit like a primary school. When you walk into the school, you get a vibe of function, and there's something about it that is just really engaging. And it's not the new fence, it's not the head teacher, it's not necessarily the uniform. It'll be all of those dynamics, but realistically, it's the people. And I think in New Zealand, they he tangata, it's the people. And I think that's why we do get a number of visitors.
No one has mentioned the new fence thus far. But I was, one thing that a lot of people do mention, and they definitely mention the people, and I won't try and say it, is the theming stuff that you guys do. So I've heard a lot of, over the years, of, you know, heavyweight champion of the world type stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, what's the, is that a Razor thing? Is that something that preceded him? Is, you know, what have you seen be the impact of that? And I think you mentioned to me as well that you'd seen a little bit of it going on at Birmingham as well. So Give Dodsey a shout out. He'll he'll enjoy the fact that he's playing around with theming.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess our purpose for theming is the fact that if it becomes a grind, then we'll lose energy. And as we said, we're all about imparting and empowering, because then we'll get that connection and that collective effort. So for us, it's the theming's been around a long time. Really, with Razor, he's able to probably get the context of the theming together. And you mentioned a Muhammad Ali theme that we had in 2017. And
Rumble in the Jungle.
Absolutely.
Played the lines in the final.
And it was how good.
I've been part of the whole story. I wasn't even there.
Yeah, but how good. And really, it was as simple as that. We followed the dynamics of Ali. He hadn't won a title for 8 years, and that was relative to us because of the fact that we hadn't won a title for 8 years. We looked at you know, the challenges that he faced, the way that he empowered himself. It meant that a lot of our language was based around boxing. We talked about playing to the ropes because we wanted to play a wide game, and you know, part of our play was jabbing and punching, and you know, just that mental imagery that the guys were able, through language, to associate their actions to. And yeah, we within our strap room, we have significant graphics and everything that relate to the theme. So when the guys come in, they're not saturated with rugby. They're saturated with performance, and they're able to hinge their thinking and their visualisation and everything on something else that is just outside of rugby but so relative. So that's an example of the contextual elements that we do, and why it plays such an important part. And you know, we've got an amazing analysis team who have got the videography elements of it. If you were to come up with a James Cameron got an award for the Titanic, these guys should get awards for what they do with our videos and our motivational side of things. And that plays a big part throughout each week. And you know, our guys are really excited by our theming, and it's been a really key part of what we've done in recent times.
Newcastle Falcons Academy in England would be the best I've seen in England at bringing that stuff to life. Have you guys conceded a driving mall yet, or is that still going?
No, that's still going. You've heard about that?
Yeah, I've heard it. Yeah. So I've heard a couple of stories. Yeah. I've heard some stories about something gets hammered into something, and I've heard that there's a bounty out there as well, so there's a financial reward. Is that true?
Yeah, there is a couple of elements to that that are correct, and I can't give too much
away. No, don't give too much away. But it's something ridiculous.
I think 57 games.
I didn't realise it was that
much. We haven't conceded a mauling try, so that's something our boys really pride themselves on. And again, it's just an element of there's a theme and context to that specifically. And really, our guys, it's more about the pride than it is about any financial element, and it's not very much.
Yeah, I was surprised by the financial element.
It's locked up in something, and it's something that the Fords refer to, and the backs have committed fully to racing on in and giving away a try out wide if it comes to that.
Conceded 20 out wide.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Nothing in the line out drive. So, again, it's just something that it's about empowering performance and igniting emotion in a really constructive way. And it's something that the guys...
Did you get feedback of people? Because I suspect people will come to your world and hopefully take it away and translate it into their context. I would imagine you also get lots of people that might come in and take it literally. What's your feedback around that? Do you get people going, oh, look, we've tried theming, it's had a huge impact? Have you got feedback from people who've gone, we tried this, but it didn't work in our context? I mean, I don't know whether those are conversations you have much.
Significant amount of conversations around that, because of the fact that we try to, not so much empower people around that thinking, but around the fact that they won't be able to take us and impart on them, as we've mentioned before. It's more about the fact that it's defining purpose, defining identity, and defining function. So therefore, if you can actually go back to that me-we element of things, if you can understand me, then you understand the needs of that and of the environment of your individuals. And then the we is about understanding your collective, and it's your collective performance, your collective effort, your almost that collective mindset. So the way that it works is a little bit around a performance spiral. That is, as the knowledge evolves, your strategy to define that knowledge grows greater. So therefore, your knowledge gets bigger, and then it spirals back to, because your knowledge is greater, your strategy evolves further, type thing. So what we're encouraging is, if you can understand actually who you are and what your purpose is, then all of the influences of context can be drawn. So that's our discussions are around, well, actually, who are you and what are you trying to achieve? And then the elements that help us to do that may then be relative. So it's almost that unpacking and repacking.
And what does that, that's a significant amount of time off pitch as well people?
Absolutely.
Is it dotting? Is that the stuff you
do? Part of that, but that's just understanding ourselves. We've got four colours to our characteristic, but there's a human brain dominance index. I think the insights element of things is, there's any number of profiling tools, but thing is, I can be profiled as something and not understand that, or not understand it, how I connect, interact, need to be connected with. But that's something that we do, and I think that's been in Razor's time, from my perspective, the fact that he understands himself better has meant that he actually relates to people better, so therefore his energy, his ideas, he's able to transmit, whereas before, because he's such an energy bundle, he's what we would define as a purple dot, highly imaginative, artistic, and of course he's hardcore purple more than any of the other influences. So what he would do is, a trait of the purple is being a 70% completer. So you'd head off down a path, get really excited by it, but then three quarters of the way along the path, because of the excitement levels, he'd generate a whole new idea and scoot off on a different path.
I think I'm pretty purple.
Yeah, absolutely. And how exciting is that? But you need, if you've got someone that gives you some structure, the yellow dots, And that's outstanding. And then our Blue Dots are our people connectors, our relationship people. The emotive, the spiritual people. And then the red ones are your Sam Whitelocks, who are your logistical and analytical. If you've got your data and it makes sense, then just bloody do it. Versus, yeah, probably holding off, and you know, your Blue Dot will be going, making sure everybody feels okay about doing it, and then you hold hands and move forward, sort of thing. But again, if you can get someone that makes sure your people are okay while you get on with it, you've got that perfect environment. So for us, we've, through our understanding, we make sure that we've got the balance of artistic people, structure, and almost just dogged determination. And if you can get that in, as a collective, and I guess make sure it's concise in practice, then suddenly you've got the opportunity to hold your trophies up.
Nice. What's it like on a bad day? So, I mean, clearly you've had a lot of success recently, and that's not to say you haven't lost games, but you've won three Super Rugby titles on the bounce. So when stuff goes wrong, what does it look like?
And to a certain extent, we haven't had consistent things go wrong.
Yeah.
So really, I don't know what that looks like in our current environment.
Yeah.
Our greatest, I guess, reflection at the moment is that success certainly would be holding together some cracks for us. I don't know how we'd be if we went 4 or 5 on the trot without success, because I believe that we may then start to have a look for something called doubt. There's no place for it, no reason for it, but there could be some igniters towards thinking that way. We are really aware of our relationships, and if there's something that might be deemed to have an effect in a negative way, or we prefer to use constructive and destructive. So if it's destructive around action or thinking or anything like that, and it's driven by stress, then we generally try and intercept that early, have constructive conversations. And as I say, thus far,
who would have constructive conversations?
Oh, each person with each person. It's not a hierarchical thing, and the thing is, we've got a real value added mindset. So everybody that's contributing, from our perspective, is contributing because of their intent of value, and that's part of the feedback that we've been getting around the successful culture is around the safety. So therefore, our newest members feel empowered to contribute as much as our most experienced, and generally it's the most experienced that empower them and encourage them to do it.
You've used the word culture a few times, and clearly everyone I've spoken to who's been to your environment have used the C word. What does it mean to you guys? So when you say it, what are you talking about?
I think you and I have spoken about this around culture being an outcome. It's not something that we hinge ourselves on and rely on it to generate things. What we are, what we aim to do is perform to our peak every day, and you know, there's a lot of learning in that mode of performance, and therefore we're inspired again the next day to come back because of the fact that we'll challenge ourselves to grow again, and we've got so many micros in operation, and that's from each and every member of our organisation. And that collective effort is something that culture is an outcome of. So we've got a, you know, an environment where, crikey, people must get up early because of the fact that they want to get to work. And you bounce into work, and then we're generally having to encourage people to go home at the end of the day just because they feel really attached. And as I said, around, can they tell you what one specific thing it is? They probably can't, and for us it's a collective. So you know, as I say again, we get our activation through inspiration.
What would a typical day look like? So only because I've spoken to Beanie and Iroh, I know Razor goes surfing every morning.
Yeah.
And he'll be in a towel.
Yeah. He'll roll in generally his jandals, but there's a few of the others who wear their jandals around as well. Really for us, the way that a week looks like, the Mercury group's in and has a meeting at 7 o'clock on a Monday morning, and that's again just doing a bit of a checkpoint on the last week around physical and emotional, and then also forecasting around whether there's any influences through the next short time period, whether it be the Monday, the full week, or into the next couple of weeks. And then we would, coaches come in and connect. There's meetings on a Monday. Then the boys will do a gym and then basically sort of start their engines. Review Monday, preview Monday afternoon, train Tuesday, day off Wednesday. And yeah, the coaching group generally aren't sighted on a Wednesday. And then Thursday, train again morning, and then Friday, clarity run, and Saturday, performance day.
Nice. So, who sports coaches? What's the, who would challenge Razor? Who would be the... obviously, Ronan O'Gara.
I guess to a certain extent, all of us do, yeah, you know, in a way. But Sam is quite significant. Our senior leadership group and our players generally is very good at just making sure we're okay. So there's so many subgroups that, you know, if you're talking about a finger on the emotional pulse, there's so many subgroups that do that. And if there's a slight misbeat, then there's a conversation had between any number of the subgroups. And then that's when the conversations are had in a constructive way with anybody, because of the fact that, as I said, that we've all got that mindset of added value and enhanced value.
I was just thinking then, so I know you spoke about walking to Birmingham, everyone being on their toes. If I walked in next year to the Crusaders, which I'm committing to, what three words do you hope I would use to describe your environment?
First one would be welcoming, so that would blend to a connection thing. The second one would be collective, and the fact that everybody is in the waka, which is the Māori canoe, and rowing in the same direction.
Nice.
And the third one, I think, would be an inspiration, and the fact that there's something there around with the way that the day functions each and every day, from different people at different times, and then from the collective, that just inspires you to A, want to find out more, B, want to perform yourself, C, want to go back and not only grow the me, but grow the we.
Nice. I'm going to do the one worders in a second. What's been your top three learnings from the trip? So if you could go back and say, here's three things that have either reinforced the stuff I think we're doing, or actually here's some stuff that I've discovered and we might need to translate into our context. What are those three things been?
I think identity is probably the big one. That would be the greatest thing that I've picked from all of the environments I've gone into. They've all got a different scope on their identity, and their identity, you know, for instance, the army, they've got an identity as the armed forces, and so therefore that identity defines quite a bit of their operational function. So that gives them that hierarchy of leadership, and we talked about rank inspiring leadership rather than necessarily people, and that being a potentially a confining factor. But in all environments, it was about actually understanding, you know, who they were, as I say, and what, I guess, what context they fit. The second thing would be around purpose, and actually fully understanding what we're trying to achieve and what our global goal is. For us, when we went Rumble in the Jungle, we wanted to be deemed kings of the jungle, and that was our mission statement. But then we were able to scaffold back to where we were actually currently operating, and understanding the each and every step in between to be able to give us every chance to get into the final and I guess achieve our mission statement. So by understanding our purpose and being able to scaffold back to it, we're able to make sure that no matter how big the next step was, it might have only been a small micro step, a small action by one person over a moment of time, but it's always constructive input. So therefore, we're constructively moving towards that goal rather than actions that are destructive, energy sapping, and you actually regress away from your goal a little bit. And I think the third thing is around operation and action, and what are the operations and actions in relationship to actually understanding who they are and what they're trying to achieve, and just seeing who might be doing it more constructively than others. In both sports psych and at the FA, there was a lot of conversations around how that structure and effort and performance might be put in place. So as I say, I got the chance to see operational function and on the Friday at Sandhurst, and then on the Tuesday at Birmingham. But I also went to RCG, the semi-professional
North Wales
club that's operating in North Wales, and just again asking about where they were actually trying to strive towards, and then how they were trying to do it.
Nice.
Yeah.
One word, is he ready?
Yeah, here we go.
Razor.
Random.
Good. Ronan O'Gara.
Quality.
Angus Gardner.
Immense.
Banger.
Nathan Gosling.
Oh, that's that was words. My next one. My next one was Nathan Gosling.
Character.
Cool. And just to put that in context, I mean, Nathan sent me some questions to ask you, and that was bizarre that he didn't mention it, but then I think he'd forgot he'd played rugby with you back in the day.
Yeah. Yeah, it was 23 years ago. Wow. And I was over here in North Wales, and the Bangor Rugby Club had been bought out by Tesco's. So I had a little bit of money, so they decided they were going to resource promotion, and I came across as a player coach, and Nathan was at Bangor University, and Gavin Cass and Nathan were both from the university, and the guy Ed Hawkins, who still keep in touch with too. Just great men, and you know, we talk about that collective environment that sport gives us, but you know, the ability to suddenly be on the phone 23 years later, and yeah, it's like you were talking yesterday, how special is that?
That's cool. That's more than one word for Nathan, but I'll give you that.
Thanks.
All Blacks.
Champions.
Theming.
Important.
Walker.
Canoe.
It's just a transaction. Rugby.
Oh, that's a great one.
I didn't take me that long to think about it.
Love.
Culture.
Vital.
Crusaders.
Champions.
Family.
Oh, I've already used the word vital, but for us, everything.
I knew you were going to say everything. Mm. Mate, it's been a pleasure to share a bed with you in Liverpool. 10, first time I've been
1021, mate. Room 1021. Gotta love it.
Mate, really appreciate your time. And as I said, I hope you enjoy the rest of your trip. Go well in the final today. And I'm looking forward to this burgeoning relationship, hopefully.
Brilliant. And I'm so looking forward to today on the back of what I've seen. One of the big discussions I had with Kieran Reid in recent times was about the cricket in particular and key moments, and how the likes of a Kane Williamson and Ben Stokes did it so well.
Yeah.
About having to own every moment on the back of one error or distraction or poor decision could be catastrophic. And what I'm going to enjoy about the netball today is it's a game that's going to be absolutely heaving with moments, and watching how people make the most of a moment, but he also respond to those moments that they don't quite get, and therefore how important is the next moment.
Yeah, Kieran Reid would be a decent person to speak to about that.
Yeah, he knows a wee bit about it.
He knows a little bit. Yeah. Mate, awesome. I really appreciate it. Have a great day, and we'll speak soon.
Thanks, Jim.